You get challenged so much when you're in the beauty industry. Everyone's pointing stuff. Like, I never thought about my forehead size till some people pointed it out. And I was like, yeah, it's a bit bigger.
No way.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra.
And welcome to the 13th episode of Hamro Yatra. Today we are joined by beauty influencer Masna Gurung, or popularly known as Masna X. Social media influencers have taken the world by storm. We see their content on a daily basis, yet fail to understand the work that goes behind the content creation and the viability of it all. It's a world that I personally have been quite curious about, and I'm so glad Masna has been candid about her world with me. Growing up with her own insecurities and subjected to the disparity in beauty standards, Masna believes that beauty is how you feel about yourself and drives the importance of representation in beauty portrayed by media. She is very clear on what she represents and is not afraid to voice her opinions on her social media platform, which has almost 200,000 followers. In this episode, we explore the great relationship she has with her dad, how she started a career out of Instagram, and the importance of being financially savvy. Only 24 years old, Masna is humble and wise, and admits she is still on her own journey to figure herself out and become more self-aware. Well, I wish her the absolute best and look forward to seeing her flourish in her journey. As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a 5-star review if you're feeling generous. Hi, Masna. Welcome to Hamro Yatra. Thank you for your time today.
Hi, it's lovely to meet you. I'm really excited. And when you sent me the DM, I was like, yeah, that sounds like definitely something I want to do. So I'm really excited.
All right. So let's start with a few random questions just as an icebreaker. Now, if you could have any superpower, what would that be?
I watched this movie ages ago, and it was The Jumper, where he could jump through space and time from like one dimension to another, and he could just be anywhere. So he could just go on holiday, or I just thought that was a really cool superpower.
That'd be pretty cool right about now.
Yeah, I know.
And if you could have any cuisine for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Oh, that's a really hard one. I don't know. Maybe chaat pate, but I know, it's so unhealthy.
Hey, it's your choice, whatever you want to eat. Now, if you could go back into any of Nepal's historical moment, yeah. If there's anything that you're interested in, what would that be?
I think because I was quite young when the king was killed in Nepal, like the king before the one that was taken down,
yep. His
brother. So I would love to be there and understand it more as more of an adult, because I remember seeing so many like sad times and like it was all over the news, like his body being carried across the street. And I would love to just like be there and understand it more. Obviously, there's like so many stories and speculations and stuff. I think it's just so interesting.
Yeah. For me as well, if I could turn back time, like I would really want to know what happened for real.
Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? It's like the whole Princess Diana in the UK with the queen who killed her. It's crazy.
So before we get into where you are now, I wanted to start from early on, way back when you were a child, right? So tell me about little Masna. What was your childhood like? How were you as a child?
I think I was always like the weird kid. Like she always did like the weirdest stuff. I don't know. She just never really like cared about like quite fitting in. I think I was a bit tomboyish as well. And I just sort of like just did my own thing. I didn't feel the need to like fit into a clique ever. I never had really had a clique of friends. I had friends, but just all from different cliques, if that makes sense. And still to this point, I don't belong to a clique of friends. I've always made really good friends from like different people from complete different parts of the world. So I think I've always been that type of person. I remember, like, in school, like, kids would be like, why did you start hanging out with that group? And I'd be like, it doesn't really matter. Like, I'm only hanging out with them because I'm like that one person in that group. It's nothing, like, people define it so much. You have to, like, fit into one clique and be with that
like
one.
Like a label.
Yeah. Like the populars and the less popular. It's so weird. I never understood that.
And were you always interested in, like, the beauty aspect or the arts and stuff, or in terms of studies, how were you as a child?
I think I was very creative always. I tried to, because, like, obviously when I was younger, me and my dad didn't used to, like, have the best relationship. And he always used to, like, pressure me to try to be more academic, which was never really my strong point. I've always been more of a creative person. And I don't think I could ever work in a job that wasn't giving me creative freedom. So I tried to, like, I think for sixth form, I did, like, really hard subjects, which I wish I didn't do. I wish I did at least one easy or, like, more art-based subject, because I was, like, trying to impress my dad so much. So I did, like, psychology, sociology, philosophy and ethics and English language and literature. And I was just like, what am I doing? So, I wish I did, like, I don't know, some, like, performing arts or, I don't know, just art.
Yeah.
I wish I did that. That would have been really fun.
I think a lot of us, like, especially growing up in, like, a Nepali household, we grow up with those challenges, like, those dynamic as well. Because for our parents, like, academic success is what they're used to.
Yeah.
And they don't see success elsewhere. So it's, like, very difficult for them to understand or even know, right?
Definitely. And I think also when you come into, say, like, a Western country, they're so developed to the point they have spaces for these artists. They have space for these artists to come up and do their work and make a living out of it. And that just doesn't correlate to, like, Nepalese parents, because my dad still does not, to this point, understand what I do and how I make my money. I've explained to him so many times. It just does not make sense. And I'm just like, it's okay, Dad. It's okay. You do you, I'll do me.
Exactly. So just talking about that as well, Masna, did you grow up in Nepal or did you grow up here in the UK?
I was born in Nepal, and then I think I lived there for like 1 year or 2 years, and then we moved to Brunei, and then we just we settled in the UK for a bit, and then I think my dad finished the army then when my sister was born, and then me and my sister were left in Nepal for 2 years with our grandparents, where they tried to, like, sort everything out here in the UK, and then after they sorted, like, a house out for us and, like, the law and everything passed, we were invited back to the UK, and I've been here ever since. So I would say, like, most of my life I've been here. And even when we moved, my dad went back into the army, we moved to a very, very, like, almost like Gora area, if I can say that, like a white area. So I was, like, very, like, distant from quite a lot of, like, Nepalese people around me, like, constantly. So I always say, like, I'm in the middle. I'm slap bang in the middle. I always say, like, I'm not too Nepalese and I'm not too Gora. I'm right in the middle.
Just best of both worlds. Like, you've got your feet dipped in, like, this one side of the world sometimes. And
half an hour, yeah.
So you mentioned you were in, like, a predominantly white neighborhood, like, white area.
Yeah.
How was it being, like, the only Nepalese person or, like, a person different to the people you see around?
When I was younger, it didn't matter as much because I think kids don't really care that much. And plus, when I was younger, I did have a group of Nepalese girls and it was fine. But once I moved to, like, secondary school, let's say, we were in a very, like, a white area. And at that point, I did feel, like, very different because, like, that's when you start growing up and that's when you start being a teenager. And then you look around you and you see people and they don't look anything like you. And there's no understanding of, like, I don't know. I think I did struggle with a sense of, like, what beauty is, because the beauty that was represented to us, even still to this day, is very white. We're never represented Asian, Oriental beauty. We're never represented all these different standards of beauty. So you just, I guess, in a way, you feel a bit insecure because you feel like, oh, I'm not going to be that beautiful, or I'm not that beautiful. And you're constantly comparing yourself to a completely different race who have completely different sets of features. So
and you try to be like them, or, like, wonder why you're not like them or why you're not pretty.
Yeah, I know. And it's so sad. But I think I like that. I think that's why I like social media now. And I like what's happening now, because there's a representation for so many beauty on social media. Like, even though like media hasn't took that on, social media aspect of it, there's so many representation. And I hope over time, like England, the Western country really takes that on, like more than just, I don't know if you saw with the Black Lives Matter and stuff, with the whole, like, there was like a pull up or shut up movement, I think it was called. And it was just Jackie Aina was like naming brands, and she was basically saying, you need to show us how many Black people, how many people of color, how many Asian people work for your brand, rather than just showing them on your campaigns. Just say, show that you're like an ethical brand, which I loved, because it was like really getting down to the core and making brands like realize and question themselves. No, we need to hire all these people of color with different backgrounds that can teach so much more about cosmetic and what they need.
Exactly.
You know, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah, I think it's all about trying to be more transparent and not be just a ally just for the sake of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you talked a little bit about you struggled with the idea of beauty when you were growing up.
Yeah.
Now that you are a beauty and skincare influencer, what does beauty mean to you now?
I think beauty has always meant like just what you are comfortable in, what makes you comfortable. For some people, like wearing little to no makeup is like what makes them the best, makes them feel the best and the most confident. For some people, it's like wearing the most craziest like eyeshadow, you know, like do whatever makes you happy. And I think I've always been an advocate of that. I've always said, like, do whatever pleases you, and what beauty seems like is for you. And I think just being in this journey, and maybe it's like part of just growing up, I think I've learned to definitely like accept myself and like learn to love myself during this journey. And I think I'm grateful that I've gotten to that point. I always look back to how insecure I used to be and how far I've come in the point of like, I don't really care anymore, which I'm quite grateful for.
You're still quite young. Yeah. So like being able to understand that is also pretty amazing.
Oh, thank you. You get challenged so much when you're in the beauty industry. Everyone's pointing stuff. Like, I never thought about my forehead size till some people pointed it out. And I was like, yeah, it's a bit bigger.
No way.
Yeah, people were like, oh, her forehead's so big. And I was like, oh, yeah, it is a bit bigger. I never realized. It's just stuff like that you just never think about till people point it out. But I don't really mind it. I don't really mind my forehead. It's just quite funny.
Like, I remember one time I met this person for the first, like, friend of a friend.
Yeah.
And it was a really hot summer day. And we were just, like, sweating. And when I sweat, I get, like, sweat accumulated on, like, my upper lip.
Oh.
And this girl that I met for the first time, she was like, oh, my God, like, you've got some mustache on your thing. And I'm like, oh, do I? Like...
Oh.
And the thing is, like, it's actually really faint, like you can't really see it like on the days, but I was just like very conscious after that time, like, you know what, fuck it, like I'm not going to listen to you, like whatever.
Exactly. It's not even that bad. I don't even think most things are that bad. I think beauty, sometimes beauty standards do push it too far, and I think it tries to fit everyone into like a very small category of how women should act, or like how every woman needs to shave their legs. Like Nepalese mums, they never shave their legs. We grew up with mums that didn't shave their legs. And like the Western culture makes it such a big thing that women should shave their legs, you know?
Exactly. But then again, if you look at European women, they don't really feel the need to shave like the armpits or the hair either.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, there's also like different parts in Europe that women don't. And there's so many standards of beauty. I don't think it's okay for media to just say, no, this is beauty. Like every woman needs to shave their legs, or it's not accepted in society. I think there is a bit of pressure for women to do that, but there shouldn't be.
Exactly.
Whatever makes you comfortable, isn't it? At the end of the day.
Yeah, if you want to shave it, you go ahead. If you don't, don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you talked a little bit about how you were doing all those difficult subjects and you wish you were doing a little bit of arts and different things that you were actually quite interested in.
Yeah.
How did you even think about starting this Instagram with like skincare stuff, beauty stuff, or your YouTube? What prompted you to take that move?
So I was at uni, I was doing my first year of uni, and then I picked sociology and media studies to do uni course on, and I loved sociology, But media studies, I really thought it was going to be more fun. Like, here's me, like an 18-year-old naive girl going into school, going into uni, thinking, oh, media studies, like without reading everything that it says about what I'm going to be studying in media studies. So naive, thinking it's going to be like all camera works and everything. But it really wasn't. It was just like, doing English language and literature, which I absolutely hated by that point because of sixth form was like, it killed me some parts. So I went into it and I just really wasn't enjoying it at all. And then that's when like Instagram started coming about, and I saw this girl, like she posted a video, like a 15 seconds makeup video, because that's what you got like back then. And I just thought, wow, like that looks so cool. I want to try that, because I knew makeup, like I knew I could do makeup back then. And I enjoyed doing makeup. So I thought like, oh, maybe I should try it. So I used my student loan and got myself a camera and just started taking photos. And it sort of just like started from there. And then I posted my first video and it did pretty well. And then it sort of just like grew.
Yeah.
And then I dropped out of uni because I was like, I can't do uni anymore. I was like, okay, I'm just going to do Instagram. So I dropped out of uni. You should have seen my dad's face.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
He's not mad now. I was like, well, sorry, Dad. I tried to go down the route that you wanted me to go down. I think it made him realize like you can't force something on a child that they can't do. If that makes sense. Like, I think it's made him realize a lot about like parenting style, and like I think we have such a good relationship now. We're literally like best friends.
Oh, that's so good to hear. And that's quite unheard of in like Nepalese families as well.
Yeah, very rare. And I think it was because my dad's always had like so much love in his heart. Like, even though he didn't understand fully how to be a dad to a daughter, like how to talk to them, and like Nepalese parents are always so angry, like the dads normally. There's no like emotional understanding. And I think we just had a conversation and I just said like, look, Dad, like you always, like growing up, you're always so like harsh to me, like your words, like, and you just really seem too happy back then. I think he was under a lot of stress as well, like obviously. Then I can just imagine how much stress he was under. And I think we just came to like an agreement where we could both understand where I was coming from and where he's coming from. And there's just so much respect in our relationship, and he's so much happier now. Like, even with his work and stuff, he's just in a better place, and it makes me happy to see him happier.
That's so lovely to hear.
It literally always makes me emotional talking about my dad, so hopefully I don't start crying.
Like, that is such a lovely story. And I think a lot of the times we argue with our parents thinking like, oh, they don't understand us, they don't love us and stuff, but they do love us. It's just they don't know how to show it. Them taking care of us, that's love, right?
Definitely. And also, like, if you need to be able to understand, like, because we might have been brought up in a Western country where we think, oh, this is how you should be showing us love, why are you not showing us love like that? But we should actually be looking at how their parents might have shown them love, to watch what they understood of what love is. For example, like Nepalese parents, like if you look at Badi Bozi and the way they showed their parents love, like every story is different. Like, obviously some Badi Bozi will show like so much love and so sweet and everything, but it's not like that for every Nepalese parents. Need to understand, like, it's a learned behavior. Parenting is a learned behavior. Like, if I had a really bad relationship with my dad and I never fixed it, I'll probably end up being a terrible mum to my kids in the future. So, like,
exactly. It's linked. The cycle continues, right?
Yeah. And it's like, it's our job to understand and look deeper than that.
And I think for most of the parents, they try to do something better than what they receive from their parents.
Yeah.
And so, like, our parents have done something a little bit better than what they were offered. Definitely. Or they wanted, like education or all these opportunities by moving into like a foreign country.
Yeah.
So our kids will want something extra and be like, why aren't you doing this? It's going to be something that we're always going to have to learn.
Yeah, always, always. We're never going to be able to top our kids, but we'll try. Nope.
Whole bunch of issues coming
up. Yeah, I know.
Now, when you then dropped out of uni and started Instagram and YouTube, did you think you could make a career out of this, or was it just, let me see how this goes?
Yeah, it was literally, let me see how it goes. I think I've always been the type of person that follows their heart. Like me and my partner, for example. My partner, he's very He wants to follow something that he knows will bring him stability, whereas I'm the type of person that will follow my heart, even though even though it's going to be harder for me to work on, is I know it's going to bring me more happiness in the long run. And I think I'm always looking for what makes me happy, and I'm always trying to find what will challenge me creatively and what will take me a bit further. So that's how we're very different, but it works out because he can be like the stable one. We always need someone who's the stable one.
You do. You need like a relationship. You need someone to ground you, like someone 100%. To like fly and dream.
Yeah. Babe, I'll do all the risky money stuff, like all the risky and jobs, and you can just be the stable income person. But it's just it'll be good. Like, I think I'm grateful that he's in my like life as well. But with social media, I kind of just went into it just thinking it is what it's going to be. I'm young, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I never thought about it as like putting pressure on myself. And because like social media, it was growing for me, and it was like, it was, I think I was like happy because it was like people were liking it and my following was growing. I was getting recognition from brands. I was getting stuff sent through, and like, you just, I think, and then like slowly sponsorship deals come in and stuff like that, where you get to do ads with companies, which is quite cool. So with that, I think with me, it was like, I never saw a bad thing. I always saw like something good to look at.
Yeah.
And it was good, like it moved forward. But there's always like with any job, there's always like the backside, like the bad side as well as the good side. Like, for example, if a negotiation doesn't go through, if a brand's budgeting won't go any higher than what your rates are, or like, for example, like, I don't know, like if a brand wants to make you do loads of things for a very small amount of money, which is basically exploiting bloggers, which happens on more regularly than you would ever think. Because I think when people look at bloggers, they think like, oh, they've got such a glamorous life. They get so many stuff sent for free. They get to go to all these events and stuff. But it's not always like that. It's a lot of the time you are like hustling and you're always working really hard. You're filming. You're working more than it looks like how much we're working. Like, we're always like creating, we're always thinking what to create, filming, like emails, and just like it just gets too much at times. Like, sometimes I just shut off from social media because it gets so much for me. So.
So you started 5 years ago, like with Instagram and YouTube. Yeah. You amassed like almost 200,000 followers on Instagram. You got like 15,000 on YouTube.
Yeah.
How did you go from year on year to like build your brand?
I think with literally everything is like consistency, and over time you literally find out what works for you and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone has such a different style of filming. Literally with Instagram and filming, you just need to realize what works for you, what people like, and you need to find a medium that makes you happy and also makes you money, and it also makes the other people that are viewing your content happy. So it's like constantly trying to find the balance, constantly staying on top of trend. I feel like every year it's getting more like harder personally for me, because there's so much more influencers that are joining, and it's a great industry, it's a growing industry, and social media in general is growing, and more people are joining social media each year. But with that, that means like there's more people that are on here, and like some people that they don't even understand their rates and stuff, like how much they should be charging companies. So companies a lot of time will be taking advantage of them, which affects the whole of the blogger demographics.
Because, of course.
Yeah. So like
someone's undercharging, then they'd probably go with that person.
Yeah. Or not even paying at some cases for like loads of free promotion.
How did you know what rates to charge? Like, because especially when you're starting out in the beginning, like you might just want the work or the exposure, right?
Yeah.
So how do you go from like being just saying, okay, I'll do whatever, to like, okay, this is what I'm worth, this is how much you need to pay me, and being adamant on that?
Well, so basically at the beginning, I had no clue what I was meant to be charging. So for me, when I charged 100, 200, and I was getting views up to like nearly like 500, K like over on my content, like so much views, so much exposure, and I was literally charging 100 200 pounds, which is like ridiculous if I think about it now, like compared to the amount of people that were seeing it. But I knew nothing, and this is the same for everyone, because they always start from like not even thinking you can charge them to then realizing you can charge them, then charging them too little, and then you realize bloggers at your level are charging so much higher. And then you all of a sudden feel like, oh my God, I'm not doing good. Like, this is so bad. Like, yeah. So, and then you start charging the right amounts, and then sometimes deals fall through because a brand doesn't think you're good enough to be charging that much.
Do you negotiate this yourself or does your agent?
I used to. Yeah, I've got an agency now. So after I've been with my agency, my pay has gone up a bit, which I'm so grateful for. I roughly charge about like 1,700 for a sponsorship, like a dedicated IGTV video. Yeah. And so that will like be roughly how much I charge, but it all depends. A lot of the time it gets negotiated down, which is quite sad because like obviously like it's not good to be doing like loads of sponsorships within a month because it's not original. It's not original content that you're bringing out. You're just bringing out sponsorship content and it looks bad on like obviously your audience that's watching your content. So it's best to do like one good like sponsorship and then like not have to worry about it and then just create. That's sort of what we're meant to be doing, but it doesn't always work out like that. But it's okay, like with it's always like up and down, and with like the economy, like right now with because of corona, like a lot of businesses have like pulled out from so many bloggers and stuff like that. So there's just so much to it. It just goes on and on.
With the brand, sometimes if they reach out to you and you feel like you don't really believe in the brand, would you be able to, or would you be able to tell your agency that, hey, like this is not me?
They're very lenient. They're very nice. They always like tell me what company it is they want to work with me and what do you think about this brand. I always like make sure I do background research and like test the products at least for a week before I even like go forward with like filming the content. So yeah, they're quite nice. Like I wouldn't ever do something that I don't really enjoy or I feel so against. I don't think I could ever do that. But thankfully with makeup, it's not that deep. Like obviously there's like the veganism and stuff like that on makeup, but hopefully over time like all brands will be vegan and we are headed to a better place with makeup anyway.
That's the hope.
Now
again with that, as your followers grow, how do you try and stay socially responsible, or does that get you down sometimes, like having to juggle so many things, you know, because your work is social media, right?
You
have to be there all the time, like you get so many messages and stuff, like how do you manage everything?
I don't have time to get back to everyone's messages. but apart from that, I do try to like get back to people who I think will be quite interesting, or like just things that I would think like, oh, okay, like that would be cool to go forward, or if I think like I could answer a question there and there and it's not gonna take me forever to get through an answer, I will try to get back to people like that. But apart from that, I don't actually get back to like everyone, and I do read it though. But I feel so bad sometimes. But I just think like I have like a set of things to do, and that there's only so much time in that day that I can get done. And sometimes I just like spend a whole day just getting back to DMs, like because I'm just like, oh, sometimes you just have to do it. But yeah, that's it really. You just have to like. It's just time. I think time's like the hardest thing to like try to work around, like figuring out what you're going to do when and fit everything around.
Yeah. So for most of us, when we're not working, we're on social media as a break, right? So that's where we get away from our work. But when your work is social media, how do you take care of yourself, or what do you do on your breaks, or just to like nurture yourself and stay grounded?
Yeah. I think I try to be in the present as much as possible, like in nature and out or with my family. I think I've noticed like it's not good to be so like consumed in the social media world, especially if, when you work in it. I think it becomes very different. The way you look at social media is so different, because I used to like enjoy social media, and now it's almost like I just know when to turn it off. I have this like little switch in my head, like, okay, come off now. TikTok is a scary one though, because TikTok is more addicting.
Oh my god, I had to delete the app because I was just spending ridiculous hours on TikTok. Like, I'm not making anything myself, but I'm just like looking at other people's videos, and I wouldn't know when it was like an hour or 2 hours.
It's
and so like, and I did that for a few months, and like, no, I just need to delete it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no. Sometimes you just need to know when to say like no to yourself.
And
TikTok is just new, because I know Instagram inside and out sort of thing. So I just know when to be like, okay, come off Instagram now. YouTube, like, it's just a platform where you just watch videos. So it's just like watching TV.
Yeah.
But TikTok, oh my gosh. I'm so glad I don't have Twitter. I couldn't do it. But like, I think TikTok is just so interesting because it's full of so much like so much new inspiration. It's different, it's new, it's fun. It's like stuff that hasn't been done before, but do you get what I mean? I think, yeah. I don't know, it's just something about it, and there's so many categories, and I maybe it's because I joined TikTok a lot later as well. It's so interesting to me. But I think it's a cool platform.
Do you create content on TikTok as well?
Not like religiously. I literally just do it to film videos to post on my Instagram, because I really like filming some tutorials on TikTok, because they have the music. You can just edit it on your phone and then literally just uses that video later on my Instagram, because I like to do like a slide of like a little cool like tutorial with like a photo of the look, and then later like post like a longer IGTV.
With your posts as well, Mazlan, do you have like a schedule of like, okay, I want to make sure I do this many posts in a week, this will be XYZ, do you have that all planned out like before the week or the month? How does that work?
Normally I was okay, so last few days I've had like time off from Instagram, because I think I've just found it too much to deal with, so I've just like come off social media completely. But once I get back onto it, I always start off by making a schedule for the week. I'll make like a monthly schedule where I'll write down everything that's important, but I will focus more weekly. And every day I would say like, okay, tomorrow I need to film about 3 videos, say for example hair tutorial, makeup tutorial, skincare tutorial, to finish it off, and then do this many outfit photos, and maybe film a TikTok while I'm filming a makeup tutorial at the same time in the background. And then I'll be like, next day I need to film a YouTube video for this. I'm not doing that great on YouTube at all, because I don't post very much. I find it really hard to balance Instagram and YouTube together, because Instagram demands so many content all the time. So I am trying to like figure out a way where I can balance the two and start doing a bit more YouTube. I've been struggling with that for a while now, but I'm sure I'll figure it out one day. So yeah, it's literally just every day I'll be like, okay, like this day I have this many things to do, and then every day I'll just try to wake up and get that done, and then everything I haven't gotten done that I need to get done, it'll just move to the next day. I tend to like write more things down than I can actually get done in a day. But yeah, I'm sure that's like with everyone
of
though.
Course. How long does it usually take you to shoot a makeup video?
It depends on how hard the makeup look is, because some makeup looks are very, very artistic, whereas some are just basic makeup looks. And but the thing with Instagram is they don't want basic makeup, like they
of
want
course
the,
you have to be extra
brightest, craziest looks that you can't even wear outside, because you'll just look like a crazy person. That's what they want. So yeah, you have to like physically dedicate a day to be like, and it's not just even the filming, it's like the setup most of the time, because you have to go through all the makeup drawers to pick out what makeup that you're going to use for that, and you sort of have like a little running theme of if you want to just use, say for example, Too Faced product on the face, and then like this new eyeshadow palette that you've got. It's just like there's a lot of like background planning. I think it comes quite natural to me because I've been doing it for so long, but sometimes it just gets really exhausting, just having to like just staying on top of that and being organized and getting your content out on time and trying to do YouTube and TikTok. It's just, it's a lot. It's so much.
But with all this work that you're doing, are you able to sustain yourself on just on social media at this stage?
Yeah. I think I would say, definitely. Because I'm with an agency too, and it's fine for me, but at this point I'm trying to find like different sources of income, because the sponsorships do come in and they're good and they do make me enough. Some months make me more than others, which works out for the months that where it might make a little less. So in that case, I'm completely fine. I don't really have an issue. But my bigger worry is that I want to be making more money for the future. I want to start saving. I want to like put money in mortgage. I think once you get to the age of like 24, you just start thinking like, oh, I need to do all these things for the future. I want to have like so much like financial freedom. I don't want to worry about finances when I'm like past my 40s. So I just want to make sure I'm doing the right things now with my finances. So that's where my like bigger worry is, I think, with the financial side. Like right now it's enough for me to sustain myself and put money in the savings, but I would like to like double if not triple that, just for myself and just for like the sake of my future and my family. Mm. And like, even like me and my partner say it all the time, like, we want to take care of our parents when they get old.
Of course, yeah. Like,
that's a big goal for us. So we want to be rich enough that we have a big enough house that they can comfortably live there with us.
Not have to worry about mortgage or work. Like, they can work if they want to keep themselves busy, but not because really need to.
Yeah, that's like a really, really big thing for us, I think. We worry. I think I like that about him. Like, I think he's really good about stuff like that. And it makes me realize that I need to do more for my family too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, do you have any projects or anything lined up in terms of like helping you reach that goal, or anything you've been thinking about?
I've been like looking into loads of like financial advisors on YouTube. There's so many. I've been watching a lot of like videos about like sorting out your pension plan, because apparently everyone needs to do that, and I need to do that. Like putting money into like a lifetime ISA for a house in the future. Just like loads of like financial stuff, like looking into investments and different types of investments that you can put your money into, because that's the only way your money ever doubles up.
Of course. I used to actually work as a financial planner when I was back in Sydney. So
really,
the regulations are different here, but the idea of having insurances and your retirement funds, I think they're quite similar.
Yeah.
And a lot of the young people, they don't think about retirement because they're like, no. Oh, you know, I'm 20 something, I'm 30, I have 30 plus years, I don't need this right now.
Yeah, people are going to struggle. They need to. And I think it's so sad, because I think only now that I've gotten to this age, and I've like, because I think it's partly because my job isn't like, I'm going to get this much at the end of the month. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I know roughly how much I'm going to get, but I don't always know I'm going to get that. Mm. So it's like more scarier, and it's made me more financially like, oh, I need to do more. I need to think more. I need to find different sources of income. I need to understand more about finances, and I need to look into it more. Mm. And it's sad that schools don't teach us that. Like, no. Schools don't teach us how to pay our taxes if you're working for yourself. How to why everyone needs a pension, and
or just about credit card.
Yeah.
Why would a person need a credit card? What does a credit score mean?
Oh my gosh.
The interest, how does compound interest work?
Exactly.
Basic things, but they teach you about derivatives and all these chemical compounds that you're never going to use in life. Like,
right, that's what algebra. Like, who needs algebra? Why do you
find
need algebra?
X, like, no, find me, like, how do I find a credit card?
Like, exactly. Like, what's a good credit card, maybe? Or how can a credit card help you in your life? Oh my god, how can you keep your credit card scores?
Like, what's a mortgage? Like, debit, credit, like, even things like that. Like, if you don't take accounting, like, back I studied in Nepal, and like, if you're not taking accounting classes, you don't know what debit and credit is. Like, you know, and because like in our families as well, like our fathers are like Gurkha soldiers and like they don't really talk about finances, right? Our moms don't talk about finances.
No, never.
They like depend on the pension or your father. So you see a very different idea of wealth
growing
up in like Nepalese households mostly.
Definitely.
And then when you grow up and then you're trying to like be independent, you're like, shit, like there's so many things I have to do and learn. Like, what is this?
Yeah. There's so many different taxes, like hidden stuff that you just never get told, like buying a house, how you need to pay a government tax, and there's just so much. It actually goes on and on, and it's really interesting. Like, I want to get into conversations with like more people about stuff like this and like just learn. And I sat my brother and my sister down. My brother's only like 16. I was like, okay, look, these are credit cards. If you're going to get a credit card, be really careful, because it's going to affect your credit score in the future. I was literally telling my brother and my sister this. I was teaching them about all these things.
They need someone. Oh my God, I'm so glad you did that.
Yeah, I was like, don't make silly mistakes like me. Like, don't not pay off your credit card at the end of the month and think it's not going to affect you, because it will affect you. Like, don't do that. Like, no one taught me that. I had to learn that the hard way. And I had to be like, oh my God, like, there's a credit score. That's a thing. Like, do you get what I mean? It's just like, it's crazy. Like, no one talks about it. And there's so much like shame around finances. Like, we can't talk about finances.
Yeah.
Like, people don't want to talk about finances, like, openly. They don't talk about how much money they make. They don't talk about how much money they're putting in their savings every month. Like, I think we need to have more open, healthier conversations about stuff like this. Yes. And it's crazy.
Like, we're not asking people to live frugally or, like, you know, be Scrooge or anything, but it's just being smart about your money.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Don't get a credit card if you can't pay it off in full every
month.
Like,
because
that means that you can't afford it. So you don't be buying shit you can't afford. Like,
exactly.
Live within your means, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Now, with your field working as a beauty influencer, it's very unconventional. And I think, and yeah, you are like the first beauty influencer that I have interviewed for this podcast. Mm-hmm. Being young as well, Masna, what does success mean to you at this stage?
I see it more as like a financial thing. I see like stability. I don't think it's like to be like the richest or anything. I think when you are stable and you're happy and there's like, you can be happy and you can do things, you can do something that brings you joy and you enjoy that career and you can do it for however long you want. I think that's like success to me. Like when you can sit back and be like, I built this house with my money. Like I saved hard. I worked hard. And I did this and I have a stable house and I have a career that I love. That I can do whatever I want with it or wherever I want to go with it. Like that freedom, I think that's like success for me. Like not having to feel like locked down in a work where you feel like you can't leave or you can't do anything. Like feeling like you have the freedom to like change up things if you want. Like,
absolutely.
I don't know. Does that make sense? Like,
just talking with you, Masna, I feel like you've got a really good head on your shoulders. Like, you're just 24, like, you understand your finances, you're doing something you love, you have, like, a clear picture of where you see your future going, like, what you want it to look like. And I think a lot of times, a lot of people really just struggle with that.
Yeah.
The concept of visualizing your goals and really working towards it, you know. But you're like halfway there already, and you know, you're not even 25. You're putting all the 30-year-olds like to shame.
No, I, you know what? I literally, I feel like I'm not doing enough. I literally have this stress to my, I don't know what it is. It's that internalized stress that I'm not doing enough. And I think I need to calm down a bit. Like, I'm too much sometimes. I think I'm too harsh on myself. Like, I feel like I'm not doing enough ever. And I think I'm always like stressing out about stuff. But I think it's like also, I need to realize like I'm overdoing it sometimes. And
like, also like just celebrating little wins as well.
Yeah.
So people like who really want planning and doing different things, we don't celebrate our little wins. And even if we
reach
our goal, we're like, oh, okay, we've done this. What's next? So you're already moving to something different.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, I haven't done this. I haven't done that. Oh my gosh, like, and then you can literally go on and on piling things that hasn't been done, and like, it's just it's so crazy. But I think it's always because I'm always like looking up to people that have already done it, or like for example, like Patricia Bright. Like when I was like watching one of her videos with her husband, and they were saying like, "Oh, we knew each other back when we were uni students and we were broke," and it kind of made me feel like, "Oh, it's okay," because that's the point I am at right now.
Mm. Like everyone has like a starting point, right? We only see people when they've like made it. But I guess the whole point of me trying to do this podcast is also to shed light on those starting points. And really talk about how do people start. No one just wakes up one day and becomes this millionaire or this person with like 3-4 businesses. It's a lot of hard work that goes and a lot of planning that goes behind it.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, talking about your situation as well, like you really need to celebrate your wins.
I think I do. Yeah, I think I do. I think I've always been harsh on myself. Like back when I used to get like so many views on Instagram, I always used to think it wasn't enough. I wasn't doing good enough. And now I look back at it because obviously Instagram's calmed down a lot for me. I've established myself, but like the hype has calmed down for a bit now. I think back to it and I'm like, well, I was doing so good then. Why couldn't I be happy at myself for what I was doing then? Yeah. I think I've always like been really like harsh on myself. I've always been like the biggest critic of myself. So I need to like learn. I think that's partly learning to love yourself as well, like and accepting yourself. And there's so much to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, to finish off, Masna, if there's any advice you could give to someone who's lost finding their path, like their passion or taking that leap, what would that be?
My advice would be to 100% do it. Like ask yourself, like in like 5 years time, are you going to look back at it and be like, oh, I'm grateful that I did that? Or are you going to be look back at it and be like, oh, I regret doing that? Because I think a lot of the time when people don't take the leap, they're like, it's mostly fear.
Mm.
And like, it's just like, just doing it. Because I'd rather say like, I did Masna X, I did beauty blogging and it didn't take off, but I had such a good time doing it. And now I'm doing something else which I love even more because I found myself through doing that.
Yeah.
Than like me saying I never did Masna X beauty blogging. Do you get what I mean? Like,
that you don't want that regret.
Yeah, like, and it's also patience. Like, I know I haven't reached my ultimate goal with what I'm doing right now. Like, I know there's a bigger goal for me that I want to reach. But it's okay. Like, you need to also tell yourself, like, it's patience. Sure, I can look at someone that's literally grown to a million in 1 year and think, like, oh, like, I'm not good enough. Like, that's comparing. But I can also think, like, maybe it's not my time now. Like, maybe I need to still figure me out. And I am still figuring me out. I've changed so much as a person from what I used to be 2 years back. And I'm still learning. And I think maybe there's a bigger reason to this. Like, for example, like, if I'm going to become bigger in the future, maybe my audience that I want for that is a different group of people that I want to inspire differently to just doing makeup online, for example. So I think there's, like, a lot of things within the whole, like, wanting to do what you want to do and doing it, like, now, for example, to, like, why it's good for it to happen later.
You're absolutely right. Like, everyone's journey is different. We can't compare our journey with somebody else. Like, I think the best thing is to just focus on your own journey.
Definitely.
And really just be open to opportunities, which is what you've done. Just being open to whatever's there and, like, really following, like, listening to your heart mostly and going for it.
Definitely.
Well, that was lovely, Masna. Thank you so much for your time today. Like, honestly didn't know what to expect because this is the first time I've actually interviewed any influencers.
Yeah.
But so lovely chatting with you.
It was lovely talking to you too.
Yeah, we do.
As always, if you enjoyed these conversations, please share with your friends and family. The screenshots you've been sharing with key insights on the episodes and tagging us at hamro.yathra on Instagram truly make my day. So thank you and keep them coming.